So the business world has changed this past year. A few years back, there was a lot of growth, transformational projects, and in 2023, there was a ton of layoffs in the tech sector, and 2024 seems to be no changing that. If anything, it's just continuing to exacerbate. I heard the phrase that we're on kind of the equivalent of a business Ozempic in terms of like trimming and trying to get everything as lean as possible. But by just cutting and cutting, I feel that we're losing a lot of like the actual like healthiness when it comes to business on how you operate, how you can be actually efficient. Craig, I know you're big in the world of transformation and business optimization and agile. I'd be curious for what you're seeing here in today's business climate for what is kind of like the best practices that a company of any size can do to one, stay trim and fit, but also just be as effective and as strong as possible.
Yeah, well, first off, thanks guys for having me back on. Again, I think you really keyed it up quite well with both the Ozempic, lean health sort of analogy. I think that's a very good place to start, and also kind of hitting on how this is not just for large organizations. This is for everywhere. I think if I could have like one main point to kind of kick us off with here is we're, I think, collectively in a transformational fatigue sense. Both so much has changed. I mean, we're March 2024 as we record this. 4 years ago was sort of the beginning of the pandemic. That shifted a lot of things for folks, both personally and professionally, really focused on repivoting and changed a lot of things, accelerated a lot of trends. Now I think the key is really to focus on maintenance. And I think this is where a lot of places, regardless of size, don't necessarily do a great job focusing on maintenance as a core competency and an integral part of the transformational work that you do. I think oftentimes we see the new shiny thing and we run towards that and we forget that, if we don't keep our diet up, we're not going to be able to hit the gym. If we don't, fund the keep the lights on activities, we're not going to be able to do all of that fun stuff. So I really think, a key point is really to focus on the operations, the back office, the stuff that isn't really important in the sense of what most people think of as important, but actually is very important. And I would argue, regardless of the size of an organization, is where you find places making sustainable differences and being from good to great and great to exceptional, standing out above the rest is where you really focus on having a lean organizational structure that facilitates the ability to, onboard, get people through technologies. I think some companies are cutting back 50 plus percent in some of their IT budgets. And, the places that don't have strong infrastructure, that's the places that are houses of cards that are falling down. And I think, a lot of places that are able to withstand that are leaner organizations, smaller organizations, but ones that have processes jotted down and can actually follow and adhere to that. The maintenance stuff, I think we often forget that that's important in any transformational journey. So I would caveat any business owner, any business leader to start that, be it you're a startup and you're just getting some seed money, or you're, an entrepreneur within a larger organization and essentially your budget from your leadership may have changed this year, but that's where you can drive change. How can you step in and really take what you have as a base and make it better with 50% less than you had in 2022? That's a challenging thing to do, but if you can think through what you need to do in terms of operational excellence, that's a good place to start.
You said a lot of things, and I developed a list of questions just off that one, Craig. First off, hi, it's great to see you again, man. But secondly, I want to take a step back. We build some foundation for what you said. Let's go back to that word transformational fatigue real quick. Can you elaborate on what that means? Because it carries a lot of weight in that word. And I say that, in the consulting industry, I feel it might be a little biased perception, but we're always aiming for transformation, especially in the process improvement world, in the IT world. It's always transformation, transformation, transformation. So what do you elaborate on transformation fatigue and what does that look like? An example?
Yeah. So to take the step back, I would say transformation fatigue, again, like you're saying, it definitely has lots of, you know, connotations with folks. I would say, you know, a word that many people would throw around, a term that many people would throw around would be organizational changes and, you know, reorganizations in terms of I report to this structure. You know, in the project management, product management world, oftentimes it's the change from a centralized standalone PMO or product office is then reshifted to maybe they support, as an example, a team that does Salesforce. So they will then shift over to an operations manager who supports Salesforce. So what does the transformational fatigue look like? It's not just, you know, access changes and, you know, having to set up cadences with new team members and having to have a new manager go through with your mundane things from hours submitted to, you know, progress reports to the stuff like that, that is very important, but we, you know, sometimes let slip to what systems may need to change access and do the teams have the right access. So a lot of that stuff, as I always like to call out, you know, regardless of the size of your organization, whenever there is a new technology, right? AI is the big thing that everybody, you know, throws that around. Okay. A lot of the, you know, processes and the procedures that places have, regardless of what technology will be there, there's a business change. And that's where I think a lot of this fatigue happens is we're saying, hey, this new technology is coming. It will do this. However, the infrastructure is not always there. And there's oftentimes a very large human cost on people. And then again, unfortunately, layoffs have been, you know, very common. And if you're in the startups phase, you know, or you don't necessarily see that, you may be impacted that in a different manner, right? Like instead of having a lot of, you know, SOWs come in, you may be having to, you know, spend more time proactively reaching out to find work. And in terms of that alone, I think the fatigue is a mixture of both where we are in the market of, you know, everybody, it's sort of like when everyone says the word recession, even if it's not coming, the markets will react. Even if you're yourself not seeing transformation fatigue where you're standing, it's happening in other areas, and just hearing that instills a little bit of fear in folks, I think.
So just to clarify on that question, Craig, so transformation fatigue, is this caused by too much change too fast, or is this a market response, you know, layoffs, cutbacks, that sort of thing? When I see transformational fatigue, I think in my head, trying to make my own definition, that people within companies are just burnt out on these big new implementations, these big new product rollouts, and they kind of just want to sit back and ride the roller coaster a little bit instead of rocking the boat. That was a lot of euphemisms in one sentence, but you know what I mean? So this transformational fatigue, what's the root cause of this for companies?
Yeah, I would say, you know, without first off the generic consultant answer of a little bit of both, but I would definitely lean more into the obviously market forces are in play. I would, you know, table that and I'll get back to that. I think like you're saying, the roller coaster of there's been lots of changes. I think, you know, in terms of planning, when folks use more legacy structures, more, hey, we're going to plan for this 5-year project and we're going to have this many people working on it, and then layoffs happen, and then the direction of the project goes in 5 different directions. It's a huge IT and a new ERP system needs to be integrated into, let's say, for an example, maybe a hospital system. And the initial decision happened 4 years ago. All the folks who made that decision have either left their current roles and are in the same org or have left the company. So I think it's sort of the, you know, lack of trust and lack of psychological safety built into it as well, because even if there was a good reason for a decision to be made. If no one is there, you could make, like, if a tree in the middle of the woods falls, doesn't make a noise. If someone made a decision 5 years ago and that person's no longer there, and someone in the company didn't like that the decision was made because it affected their team 5 years ago, and they start rumors or they perpetuate rumors, unfortunately, even if those are, you know, nowhere near being true, that will have an impact on the team and the morale. And then I think, sort of close the point here with the market forces, is when you read the news and see, you know, layoffs and fatigue in the overall strength of the industry. And again, lots of people in the sector have friends who are either, you know, doing startup work or who are in a company doing implementations, feeling burnt out themselves, then you kind of scratch and say, hey, this isn't just me isolated here. This is something bigger. So I think it's mostly, you know, the isolated cases of the unique challenges teams have. And then unfortunately, when you bring in everything, it gets the snowball effect, like many things.
Thank you.
How do you go about handling the fatigue, though? I mean, I imagine a certain amount of it is just narrative driven, because these projects are multi-year, multi-stage, long drawn out processes where it can be hard to actually at an individual level see either your contribution or the evolution of it. And compounding on with a company, let's say, that does have layoffs happening or budget cuts and responsibilities are going through, how should someone in a leadership or management position try to maintain the narrative of it, of things are actually going okay and it's not as dire as it should be?
Yeah, I think, like, much like conflict, there should always be a little bit of fatigue. I think to a certain extent, we shouldn't try to fully eliminate it. Folks who are in a leadership position, I would say the key is to be communicative. And I think this is where the gaps do occur sometimes, is not having full visibility into things, not necessarily sharing the values and the vision of the team, or just out of either change that's consistently going on in the company, or a leader who may not necessarily even know that the problem is as big as it has been, not communicating that in a genuine way. And I think the thing is, I always advocate for places to get the leader to, even if someone from an outside team or if a consultant is involved or if someone else is involved in draft something, have that leader at least review it before they share it and try to add a little bit of their flavor, their flair in, so the messaging seems more genuine. I think that's always a key point. And then I think just having an open dialogue, being able to feel like you can share things in terms of, what do we think is going right? Because I think as challenging as these large projects are, and as easy as it is to pick out the negative sides of things, there's always going to be positives that do occur. And I think I will challenge anyone on the call to, when you are in those situations, do the, you know, out of the world of stand-up comedy, yes, and. Yes, we have this challenge, and we've also grown as a team, or find a positive to add to the whole team, or find a way to bring in other team members and not just bring them in, but also build up that there's a positive light to things. And that's challenging, right? Because you would also have to, in certain circumstances, admit that, A, there is a problem. Depending on the culture, there may not necessarily be that ingrained in the culture, and that's always challenging. And B, right, just because you're locked in on a large project and you may have to waver off, you can still go back on track and get the project done, even if it doesn't follow exactly what the roadmap, what the plan had. And I think that is always better than trying to adhere to a milestone or a date or something that would be so unsustainable that it would further burn out the team.
So, Craig, my question for you then, moving on from transformational fatigue, let's talk about maintenance. By maintenance, I'm assuming you're meaning those companies that are experiencing this fatigue or are being rocked by that market instability. They're pulling away from those long-term expensive projects and focusing more on their internal processes and their operations, you know, whether that's finance, sales, marketing, getting that stuff down pat and building that core foundation. Am I understanding maintenance right? Or have I completely gone off topic?
Yeah, no, I would adhere to what you're saying, and I would agree with it. Right, when lots of change happens, sometimes we don't focus on what we do well. So yeah, like you're saying, the operations, the financing, not just understanding it, but if there is something that's changing and we know that people are apprehensive about it, how can we use that as a nudge into some future changes? And also, I think, right, like just because we're going towards something, right, the journey is also important. We need to still fund these things. I think sometimes people forget that. We need to make sure that, you know, we can't just say, hey, we've got all the seed money for a startup and we're going to spend all of this on outreach, research and development, marketing, social media marketing, all of this stuff. Well, you know, you need to do some stuff on the operation side. And I think oftentimes, you know, operations is either, if it's a core competency for a place, they do it well when the times are good. And if it's somewhere that's a little more scrambling, they may have a few good people who have notes jotted down somewhere in the organization, and they may be able to get some of it done during the good times. And then now it's like, it's bad. There's not a lot of business coming in. I don't know what to do. Well, that's when you should still identify pain points. I also will always argue that, hey, if you're doing projects, right, like a place like Google budgets time for moonshots, I think anyone in some sort of delivery service should budget some of their time for continuous internal growth, be that working on streamlining internal operations for non-revenue generating teams, taking the time to mentorship others in the organization about what type of delivery efforts they're doing, or even just to do some sort of mapping of processes that may not be known in the company. I think that is a huge thing. And if you're in a huge company, that's a great idea. And if you're just getting started, or if you're looking to, you know, hey, I've done, you know, lots of big company work, maybe I want to pivot over to startup work, I think that's a place that you could easily step in and get some quick wins in somewhere. If you say, hey, you know, I want to focus on this R&D stuff, but hey, I do have a little bit of process mapping, and can I just kind of ask some questions and see how you go through stuff on a regular day-to-day basis, and maybe give you some additional ideas, see what I've seen other places, and see if we can make some gains that way as well.
That's good advice.
To take it back to the analogy of like fitness, you know, we were in kind of the bulk years, and then now it feels like we're definitely cutting. The thing about maintenance, though, is you're just maintaining. You're not necessarily growing, which is what a business ultimately wants to do. So how do you really strike that balance, though? Because I agree, like, you need a core set of a foundational layer that is secure that you can always rely on. But there is times to maybe where you don't have enough resources and you need to be a lot leaner. Or there's other times where you need to, again, take that moonshot or really try to seize that opportunity and grow. How do you go about balancing that while keeping all of your workforce, again, at full alert and at a decent productivity level, so they're not just being burned out and tired?
Yeah, no, to the point of the fitness analogy, right? I mean, I would always argue, right, just maintaining is better than losing, you know, be it weight or, you know, if you're going to the gym, the number of reps you do. If you're maintaining that, I think you have to look at it, if it's a leaner time, that's growing, if your competition is having net losses. And then I think the other side is you need to really focus on, you need a foundation to grow from somewhere, right? This is where we are now. Where do we need to go? And I think it's challenging too, to the other point is, you know, if you're accustomed to the gains, the bulking up era, if we want to stick with this fitness era, and you just don't have as much calories coming in, you can try to go back into the gym and do all that work, but it's just not going to sustain it. So then you have to repivot, maybe cut back the amount of times that you go in, maybe find other ways that you can move things around, knowing that this is an interim period and in the future, you're really just setting yourself up and keeping that mindset of growth and agility and being lean so you can go pounce and get, you know, better for the next time when things do start to swing back up. Because if you're keep going down, that's just going to kill morale and you're only going to continue to go in one direction. It's all about having that mindset of we're maintaining this, right? I think people always push back against this. We're maintaining this level so we can be better when we have more things. And I think the people who are understanding that the answer to that, right? A lot of people always go, well, when are we going to have more things? And the answer is often, we don't know, but you can model and you can say, hey, we're going to act in this way to try to get to this point. We don't know when it's going to happen, but we're going to try to do the best we can to stay adaptive to things.
I think Tanner's question poses a really good point, is that we covered the fatigue and that, you know, what that can mean to different people. Maintenance sounds like a dirty word in business, and it feels like it's got a bit of a bad reputation. So how do you shift that mindset? Because I understand what you're saying, and especially in lean times, you've got to focus on your core. Is that an exercise pun? I don't know. But why do you think maintenance has gotten such a bad reputation in the business world? Is it just because of monstrous growth over the last decade or something like that, and no one likes to stand still, or is there other reasons behind that?
I think I would even take the step back. I would say maintenance just has a bad word across society. Now, one of my favorite episodes, I would say podcast episodes of all time, is from Freakonomics, and it's episode 263, and it's essentially called In Praise of Maintenance, and that's really what it dives into, is how infrastructure projects, venture capital, policy, and engineering really take that step to the next level, not during the exciting times, but when things are being pulled back and you need to be leaner and you need to handle that. I do think that if you lean into the growth mindset, you will understand that the growth mindset means you're always striving to be better. However, it's not always going to be possible to do that given the resources that you have at that time. And, you know, resources in this case will be, you know, access to capital, ability to hire new folks, etc. I think that the key here is if you have that fixed mindset approach, you look at lean times and you say, okay, I'll just coast for a little bit here and it'll get better eventually. If you have the growth mindset, it's okay, what are some other projects I can do here as opposed to sitting around not doing anything? How can I really dive into things? Because that's where you're going to make those gains, right? How can I take this process and make it better? I think the key is, right, challenge that fixed mindset approach of, okay, this is just how it is, and say, how do we make it better so the next time this doesn't happen? And again, I mean, I personally do not think that maintenance is a bad thing. I do think that it has gotten a bad rap. I also think that a lot of times people only focus on things when it's in the aftermath of something bad that's happened, be it a natural disaster or something. And I always challenge, hey, why do we have to wait until after the flood to say we shouldn't have built on the flood zone? Why, you know, shouldn't we have challenged what we were thinking about before? But again, it's a losing battle in certain circumstances. I would reposition that in terms of from the growth mindset to say, are there maybe little tweaks that we can lean into, little nudges? I really think another area to really grow is nudges here. Like if you're not going to change things systematically, right? I think that's the other thing too, that you brought up a little bit too, Tanner, earlier, is, you know, we go from kind of one extreme to the other of lots of changes when we have the money to not a lot of changes when we don't have the money. And I think as much as, you know, that is what we try, you know, and strive for, oh, you know, when the times are good, we want to get as much stuff in as we can. That also drives some of the unsustainability when, you know, we have all of this stuff and we're working and we do have enough people working, so it's not a problem. But then all of a sudden, a few things change and everything shifts. I think trying to balance and get more towards the middle. I think that's where maintenance really can reap rewards, is having less fluctuations. And this is not just true for work. This is true for personal relationships, for exercise routines, for things outside of work as well.
So first off, I'm going to let the slight that your favorite podcast episode wasn't this one. I'll let that one go. Freakonomics is a great podcast. But to paraphrase your answer, maintenance isn't coasting. It's not resting on your laurels. If your business is in maintenance mode, you're not just sitting back and hoping things work out. You are just directing your money and resources to maybe smaller but more core processes instead of reaching out and trying to make massive gains. I understand that, right?
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, it's almost like you're broadening the time span, right? Like you're in, let's take another analogy of maybe like investing. If you're constantly like the markets are hot and you're buying a lot and then the markets cool down and you're selling a lot, you're bound just to lose a lot of money. But if you are consistent and you invest the same amount every month or every week, every paycheck or whatever, over the period of many, many years or many decades, you're going to have a considerable amount of compounding results because of that. So in the sense that you're, if I'm understanding things right too, and just trying to play it through in my head, if your systems and processes are developed to where you can consistently execute on them and you're not doing these giant peaks and giant valleys, then you're going to have a lot more consistency, but a lot more growth over time. Is that kind of like the same?
Yeah, idea? I would say, you know, if we're using the analogy of personal finance, I would think that that's a great way to hit on that, right? You're compounding your growth over time. So don't go and overextend during the good times of what you can resource. Maybe give a little bit more when the times are really good. So then knowing that it's not going to be like that forever, but then when things tip down, when the market gets more volatile, look at that as also an opportunity to potentially, you know, buy some new asset classes, maybe something a little bit more risky, but also maybe cut slightly back, knowing that that's not necessarily going to change too much of your overall outlook, because A, you're still maintaining, you know, that money that you're putting in. If you put a little bit more in during the really good times, when it's, you know, going to be a little bit tougher and maybe you need to pull back slightly, it's not going to be as drastic. Another analogy I like to think about it is if we look to like a lot of the Western land management, you know, some of these projects out in like California, Arizona, they were started in like the 1800s, which was the century that was abnormally wet. So in addition to the changes of, you know, the amounts of water that some of these reservoirs are having, their baseline was off of a time that was particularly good for rain flow. So I think that's the other fallacy that you can jump into, is if you're not an investor, you may only tie your values of and when you invest to the good times. And if you only do that when times get bad, you may totally pull out, and then that would essentially be like a house of cards. You need that sort of continual maintenance of pushing things through the whole time, as opposed to only using baselines from the good times. I think that's another, you know, area we get in trouble with as a society, is building baselines off of really good and really bad times, when oftentimes through time, average is where, you know, things are. And if we look at the averages, a lot of the things that we think we know, we may actually flip on our heads.
What is it said that if in any recession or depression, every stock is on sale, so you should be buying it up? And I would assume there's a lot of cases where businesses that are formed in recessions and stuff are actually way more resilient. And so in some ways, as the market's down and you're building your baseline off of a low market rather than a high market, you can use it as a competitive advantage in some sense. Is there any other ways you could think of? You've already highlighted a few of where, when things are a little bit more escalated in terms of like tensions and, you know, things are in the air and there's a lot of uncertainty, that different companies can actually use this moment as an opportunity rather than just focusing it as a moment for like belt tightening.
Yeah, building off that, I do think, and this is also, you know, something that's happened in the dot-com boom in the 2000s after the Great Financial Recession, in, you know, 2007 to 2009, a lot of people left corporate jobs to set up things. If we look at a lot of the initial, you know, craft breweries and stuff, you know, a lot of those people left corporate jobs after the financial crisis. So I would also say, like, hey, we're using this as, hey, this is a time for companies to do things. If you are considering a, you know, possible career change, obviously look at the finances, look at the decisions. But, you know, if you're thinking about something, this may be a good time to also drive into things, not just necessarily full career pivot, but, you know, trying to get involved in more groups or something. I will caveat, again, I know Wyatt and myself at my previous employer worked on some communities of practice, and that was something that I would say traditionally is invested in upon more so during the good times, and then just company events and other areas sometimes pull back. I would, you know, maybe caveat places to do less of, you know, really big shindigs or whatever during the good times, and sort of just fund more sustainable things. So when times are tougher, you can bring people together to get those new ideas. And then I do think if we look at like the timing of some of like the iPad and a lot of the development out of Apple, a lot of the software development and the hardware products that they've come up with, you know, in the last 15 years has been in the face of adversity of, you know, going through things. Obviously now there's some question marks with where they're headed with some of their recent decisions. But I would say the iPad, right, a lot of that development was kind of in the wake of the great financial crisis. And, you know, if we also look at some of these social media companies, right, like some of those really gained traction from there. And a lot of people have pivoted into that space. And I think, you know, unfortunately, that's another space where you have to be thoughtful with that, because you can't tie anything to one system. You can't tie it to one app that could, you know, no longer be here or could be not as sustainable. You have to sort of have a vision, have a value that is not agnostic, that is agnostic and is not tied to a particular type of technology. So I think that would be the thing that I would to try to close it up with a few sentences to try to answer the question is, I think start with looking at yourself. Like if you think there's either an area, a potential career pivot, depending on where you are, I would start by looking into that, right? Is there something that you've learned in your career to this point that maybe you could do, you know, outside of the professional services world or outside of IT and maybe a startup, helping someone with a startup, you know, getting into the hospitality sector? And then if you're a company leader, how do you make the case to your leadership? I think it's very simple of, hey, we, you know, as opposed to having X number of recs or X number of roles coming up, we can accomplish these outcomes with these inputs that are these people that we can come in here. So again, I think a lot of it is the growth mindset of, the growth mindset leans into maintenance as an opportunity to facilitate future growth.
I think it's a fun concept to noodle on, if you will, of utilizing times of upheaval for a unique, you know, twist, whether that's in your career, whether it's in your business strategy. This really could be a fantastic time to sit back, take a breath, and see what's next. And it may not be what the original decision was last year or 2 years ago or whatever, and you may have to pivot, but it's a really cool way to put a positive spin on a tumultuous time in the work world now, right now. So I appreciate that perspective. That makes a lot of sense. Now, Craig, to kind of put a bow on the maintenance discussion, I want to ask you, what advice could you give to an individual who's maybe been impacted by this, to, you know, this upheaval, they've been laid off, the company sold, whatever the situation is? What sort of maintenance activities could an individual do? We've been focusing on companies and, you know, scaling back projects, but let's take it to a bit more micro scale. And what advice could you give to someone who's been affected by this and is currently in that upheaval period?
Yeah, first off, I think, and you know, I think this is good advice for, you know, anyone, regardless of if they've been impacted by this or if, you know, they're just knowing people who are impacted, right? We're all humans. So I think starting with the fact that, you know, checking in on people, making sure they're okay. Virtual, you know, folks just checking in on them. You know, if you're close enough to someone, maybe seeing if they want to go get coffee just to check on them. I think also understanding that people need to go through their own emotions if they're impacted by a layoff or if things change with them. In terms of some tangible things folks can do, I think, right, it's a great time to maybe catalog some of your career, not just growth, but also some of the things you've done. Like I know myself, whenever I'm on projects for clients, I jot down work that I do. I always tell people, hey, don't wait until something happens. Maintain a repository of what you're doing.
Oh, wonderful. Well, Craig, thank you for your insights. This is a really cool way to spin a complicated topic. So I appreciate you breaking it down like that. Where can people find you if they want to follow you? I will already say that your LinkedIn is wild. I love following your LinkedIn, Craig. And I say that, in my opinion, Craig is like the certification master. It seems like every like week I see a new pop-up like, Craig Oliver got this new certification. He's doing this more training. You're just like an education training like junkie. And I love that about you. So where can people find you, Craig, if they want to follow you or get in connection with you?
Yeah, LinkedIn would be the best place to reach out. It's my name, Craig P. Oliver, on LinkedIn. Try to be fairly active on that. Just I think right before we hopped on here, I had just put a post out about how I used the AI to help with one of my brackets. So do try to get as much stuff. Try to dive into the AI, some of the, you know, trainings and other stuff. So try to be active on that. But yeah, that's where most of my content is, and that's where you can find me. Happy to connect if any of this resonated with you guys out there in the wider world. Happy to chat about this or set up time. If you have any interests, feel free to reach out to me there and we can get connected if you have any interest. So thank you guys for the time.
Well, perfect. And again, thank you, Craig. And thank you, everybody who's made it to the end of the episode. If you have, please make sure to like, comment, subscribe, share to all your friends, share to all your family. We've been growing each week and it's been fantastic. And we're looking to share some more good information with some more people. So until then, we will see you all next week. Bye-bye.